This is Comics Therapy, Episode 11. No reviews, just analysis. We'll be discussing three books from October 2nd, 2013. Todd, the Ugliest Kid on Earth, number 6. Iron Man, number 16. And Mara, number 6. So read them first or forever hold your peace. For grief counseling, we'll talk about Volume 8 of The Walking Dead, containing issues 43 through 48. And for Aaron's inner child, well, I'm not going to follow the rules anyway, so why does it matter what I tell you, right? Before we begin, we'd like to give a very special shout-out and thank you to Edward, a official Platinum Club superfan, for our massive audio upgrade. The show probably sounds 1,000 times better this week, and it's entirely due to Edward's tremendous generosity.
Seriously, from the bottom of our hearts, thank you so much. Now that we can't hide behind our lousy recording equipment, we'll have to up the ante with the content, too. No pressure, Aaron.
I make no promises there.
Hi guys, it's your favorite Australian, Mike Garvey, here, also known as Avant Garve on the Twitters. My confession for this week is that I am a sucker for any comic book that features a team with even a hint of a family-type element. Even if they're a bickering family, I'm into them. I guess as I've gotten older, I've realized that's because they're a bit of an escapist replacement for my own family situation, and I think I would rather deal with a comic book family than my own family. So yeah, help me if you can. But anyway, thanks for the show. Till next time, see ya.
Welcome to Comics Therapy. Neither Aaron nor I is a licensed psychotherapist, although we sound so good on these sweet new mics, you'd never know that, would you? Don't take anything we say as serious medical advice either. I can't speak for Aaron, but I'm making this all up as I go. The theme of the show this week is outsiders. Period.
In between comic segments, your very own nerd confessions. We want to celebrate the little geeky things we all do, say, and read, and enjoy. Share them with us, and we'll share them on an upcoming episode of the show. Maybe the CW's Arrow is your guilty pleasure. Maybe Saga isn't your bag. You can call, Skype, or email your nerd confessions, and we'll take them and play them on the show. All the details are on the website, comicstherapy.com, and remember, catharsis is cool.
And in between shows, you can find Aaron on Twitter, at Aaron Myers, and me, at Andrea Schock, and the show account, at Comics Therapy. You can even send us presents, or just me, actually. Flattery will get you everywhere with me. So, Aaron, how was your week?
Pretty good. Busy as usual with all the normal stuff, but, you know, winter's coming, so...
What is winter like in Portland? I don't remember winter being a thing.
I don't know what winter's like in Portland. I live in Eugene.
Whatever. There's only one place in Oregon, and it's Portland. You're close enough.
Well, what is it like? It's cold and rainy, but not as cold as Alaska, and not as rainy as Seattle.
Okay. Wide range?
Yeah.
Does it snow?
Yeah, we get snow a couple times a year here, but it's, you know, it's sea level, so it's not a ton of snow. But yeah, it just kind of gets dreary, I guess. Did you ever see The Road?
Really? Really? What are you actually asking here?
Oh, that's a good idea for our next grief counseling.
No, I've never seen The Road, but I'm familiar with the concept.
Okay. Some of those scenes were recorded, like they did it in like the woods of Oregon around here because they're kind of bleak. You know, you just get that hanging mist and... I like it, you know, but there's not a ton of sunshine.
We have sunshine for miles here, so if you need a respite,
but you're
you
also,
know how to
You're
know
also
how to find
not
it.
In the city, too.
Right.
I mean, the city gets a lot of... It's pretty dreary and cold
right.
in San Francisco, too.
Strategically not in the city.
Yeah, no.
Good. Close enough for access, but none of the city stuff.
That's true. So what does it mean? Like, this year, I think I'm feeling, like, extra prepared because we got our roof replaced and... I just convinced Chrissy to let me buy some more like emergency ration foods off Amazon.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Why? What are you preparing for?
I would like to have at our house preparation for like a week that if we're having like a crazy storm or power outage or something to where we just don't have to go somewhere for like a week.
Okay.
And I don't think that's that crazy or out of the realm of possibility.
I guess. I don't think it's that outside of the realm of possibility to not go anywhere for a week, but I still think it's crazy.
I guess. I'd rather not have to, like, try to find food if we were having a, a natural disaster, and it's totally possible around here with, you know, with the rain. We have the Willamette River that kind of flows right through town, and there's flood controls now, but in the past it would flood regularly, especially right, like we're in a flood zone. But
no, that's super scary.
Yeah, so I mean,
I mean, if it's flooding though, you're probably not in your house.
Well, where we're at, we're like a flood zone 3, so it has to really flood for it to get to our house.
Got it.
But there have been times, you know, it was like 40 years ago is the last time it really flooded, and the road, our main road, is River Road, and the reason it's called River Road is partly because it parallels the river, but also because it became part of the river on a fairly frequent basis.
Nice.
So, you know, if we were cut off that way, it's hard to get access to things. And, you know, if we're out of power for a week, that sort of stuff, it hopefully never happens. But I'd rather be able to just stay in the house, have batteries and, you know, radios to listen to what's going on and, you know, keep lights on and be able to cook food.
No, I completely acknowledge the logic to everything you're saying. You're making me feel wildly unprepared for an emergency in my own area, which, let's be honest, is totally going to be an earthquake in like a minute. I think there's a very strong possibility there will be a serious earthquake in the next, I think, what are they saying, 10 years, 20 years?
Sure. I mean, it's happened.
Right. And there's some science behind the prediction that it's going to happen again soon-ish. So, yeah. But I'm I'm still not unpacked, so let me finish that part first.
Come on, this is easy. You just hop on it. You can literally prepare for the apocalypse on Amazon and have it delivered to your door 2 days later.
I love delivery.
Yeah. Or you've got like the Google checkout at your where you're at. You could probably get it all locally sourced and delivered right to your house.
Genius. They just added Whole Foods to that.
You can have a artisanal radiation suit made for you and delivered right to you, fitted perfectly.
Man, your goal with this show is to just present me as, like, the snobbiest, most entitled, spoiled brat ever, right?
But if you're going to be a doomsday prepper, you might as well be a stylish doomsday prepper.
That's the thing. I am neither a doomsday prepper nor particularly stylish.
Well, yet. Every week we're getting a little closer.
Are we? I'm not convinced.
We'll see. It's like an inception. You don't realize you don't realize it's happening.
Oh, so many layers.
Yeah, we're like 3 layers deep right now.
That is super creepy.
Welcome to the show. That should be the motto. Comics therapy, super creepy.
It's like our unofficial motto.
Okay. How was your week?
Well, we got back from Pittsburgh very, very late Tuesday night. I mean, basically Wednesday morning. So traveling takes a lot out of me. I was giantly crabby yesterday.
You were also just talking to not particularly coherent.
Really?
Yeah, it seems very scattered to me, but I would blame it on either sleep deprivation or some sort of drugs that you had taken on the plane.
Really? Like the other day I was, or currently I am?
No, yesterday. I mean,
really?
Yes, today, but a normal amount today.
Damn. I kind of hate when that happens. I have no memory of it.
Well, that means it was good drugs.
Huh. I'm going to have to go back and check all my chat logs. Who knows what I said?
Well, remember, especially that one part, I'm like, you sent me something, and I'm like, that's not English.
I do remember that. Yeah. I got myself in trouble a couple times yesterday. I finally decided to lay down and take a nap because I was, like, not fit for human consumption. But I'm better now.
Mm-hmm. Good.
It's Thursday.
Yeah. Yay. Hopefully, you know, people want at least a show they can somewhat understand. Or it has to be completely incoherent. We can't do it halfway.
They can hear us now, but seriously, I can't make any promises about what actually comes out of my mouth.
Well,
but it's a good week. I think there's not a lot on the horizon for the weekend. Avi has a like Sunday morning hockey game, but not a whole lot else. So just probably get a bunch of stuff done around the house. Keep checking my mail for this mysterious package that you told me you sent me, but that has not yet arrived.
Yeah, I think it's gone because I sent out 5 packages and everyone else got their packages.
This is terrible.
Yeah, so
I was thinking, though, that it's probably karma.
I guess so. It's a bummer.
I mean, still have stuff for you and Roderick that was supposed to be mailed in May that I have now moved to this new house. So probably by the time I actually go to the post office, Like, they'll hand me as my reward at the post office what you sent me.
I mean, is it possible that they... It wasn't, like, signature required or anything like that, but it would be too big for a mailbox.
Yeah, I still have to double-check with my neighbor. He did mail and, like, trash cans and shit for us. But I feel like if something awesome came, because I'm sure that it was shiny and presented in a very exciting way, and he was probably excited for me, he would have brought it over. But
no, this would just be a package. So.
Man, where's your sense of... I don't know, adventure and fanfare and style.
Yeah, for somebody who says she doesn't have style or some sort of fashion sense or something, whatever you just said before, you're expecting a lot from other people.
I am actually a designer, so perhaps I was a bit overzealous in proclaiming that I don't have any sense of style.
Right.
Or but, yeah.
Really not really selling your resume there.
Thanks, dude. Thanks so much. Mm-hmm. You know what? You know what? It's time for me to yell at you. It's time for Aaron's inner child.
Oh, yeah. Let's mm-hmm. do that.
I'm excited. So each week I give Aaron 90 seconds to talk about whatever he wants that we don't have time to discuss more deeply. It's 90 seconds. It's supposed to be one book, one new comic from the past week that we're not analyzing. But if you haven't noticed, each week Aaron has flagrantly flaunted these rules and ignored them completely. So now I am mad as hell and not going to take it anymore. So Aaron, if you don't talk about a comic from the past week, I'm going to put your inner child in timeout. Do you understand me, young man?
Yes.
So are you going to talk about a comic from the past week?
Yes.
I totally don't believe you. I don't trust you in the slightest bit. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Are you?
Go.
Okay. This week I want to talk about Batman Black and White. Have you ever read any of these?
Yep. I read the first one.
Did you read, like, the previous ones, though?
No.
Okay. So, they've been doing this. There's, like, been three series. Like, one in the late 90s, then I think mid-2000s, and now this is, like, the third one. But they're great. I have random issues of the old ones, but I don't have all of them. And so, I just ordered yesterday. I just had to have it. So, I ordered, like, the three trades of all the old stuff collected, too, because it's just such an amazing kind of collection of talent on these books. And the great thing about the series that I love is it's not really tied to continuity.
Yes, I did notice that.
But I love that because it lets people that would normally never be allowed to do a mainstream, like Batman or Superman book, that kind of thing, to write the stories they would want to do.
It also makes it easy for people like me to just pick it up and read it.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about anything. I mean, it helps to know history of Batman sometimes. But you don't have to enjoy it. It's just purely talented creators getting to do fun things with the characters. They're just wonderful. So I really loved the second issue. I loved the first issue. And I'm excited to go back and catch up on the previous issues that I had missed.
Anything specifically from the second issue that you can mention since I took up a little bit of your time?
Oh, sure. Well, the Raphael Grandpa story is probably my favorite. Not so much for the writing, but just his art is so, it's like, he's one of my favorites. He also doesn't do a ton of stuff, so that makes it kind of extra special. You know, I think if he was doing tons of ongoing books and we were kind of oversaturated, it wouldn't be as special as it is now.
Awesome. So, do you recommend it?
Yeah, I recommend it kind of to anyone. You don't have to even be the biggest, like, Batman fan to really love a lot of this work, or at least appreciate the art that goes into it, because most of the artists are just unbelievable.
My impression of the first one was that it was fun. And fun is good. I mm-hmm. need more fun.
Fun in superhero comics, especially.
Absolutely.
My nerd confession this week, and this is Philip Cummings, is I love hip-hop MCs who obviously love comic books, like DJ Green Lantern, MF Doom, David Banner, Method Man, who goes by the name of Johnny Blaze, and my personal favorite, Pretty Tony, a.k.a. Dennis Cole, a.k.a. Robert Downey Jr. ain't got nothing on this real Iron Man, Ghostface Killer!
Our first book this week is Todd the Ugliest Kid on Earth, number 6. It's published by Image Comics and written by Ken Christensen with art by M.K. Perker and colors by Cernal Soyalien, which is absolutely not how you say it, but I'm sorry.
That's all right. I'll take the apology for him. Or, oh, boy.
Anyway. Oh, you just made it worse.
So I'm supposed to recap this book, and we were looking for ways to, like, give a synopsis or recap of this story, and it's almost kind of impossible in a lot of ways, but the way I would recap it is Todd is a pure boy in a world of ugliness, sin, and corruption.
Oh, I like that.
That's the only way I could kind of recap it. And these are the stories of Todd's adventures in life in a world that is nothing but kind of horrible.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's great.
Okay.
He does not fit in any way. But I think one of the reasons why it's not just horrible to read is that he doesn't seem to have caught on to that fact.
Right.
It's almost endearing how much he's not aware of how not a part of the world he is.
Yeah, but that's part of, like, his ignorance, his blissful ignorance is sort of part of the charm of who he is. Mm-hmm. And it goes to that character of, like, he is the kind of this pure spirit in a world that doesn't exist anymore. You know, it's kind of a twisted perversion of the world, but
it is, like, bizarro world.
Holy kind shit. Of, though, in a way, it's sort of, I kind of think it almost like as Christensen's sort of commentary on society, that this is really kind of how society is. We're just all in it too. So we don't see the ugliness of everything that goes on, like ugliness and hypocrisy of the world.
Right.
And it's just kind of amped up, you know, in a cartoony sort of way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the reason why some of the particular almost satirical moments have such a great impact is because we can recognize exactly what he's pointing out to us. Like, guys, this is totally fucked up. And yet nobody's saying anything about it. But the references to actual reality are many. I was surprised in the first arc how grotesque some of those references are.
Mm-hmm.
This one is a little bit lighter because it's very meta, looking at, like, they're at a comic book convention right now. So it's a little lighter and funnier, but still just as, I don't know, just as sharp in its observations.
And yeah, it's just, this is more like a take on, I guess, pop culture and religion, I'm guessing is what this arc is really focusing on. And the first arc, more of a commentary on, I don't know, there's a lot of stuff, but maybe the legal system. Society and the legal system.
I think the legal system, but also our consumption of the legal system as entertainment.
Yeah.
The goals of the police chief to be known as somebody on caliber with, oh God, what does he say? Oh, this is our JonBenet.
Yeah.
Oh God. Like, that's disgusting.
Right.
Yet a little bit funny.
No, more than a little bit. It's all, there's a lot of funny. It's very funny. Book. Yeah. That's why, like, after reading the first issue of this, I'm like, I don't know what this is, and I don't know if I like it, but I want to read the next one.
Yeah.
And I guess in a lot of ways, maybe that's how I feel about every issue, that it's like, you kind of end in going like, whoa, there's a lot going on here, but I still want to see what's going on, what happens next.
Yeah, I don't always feel proud of myself after I'm finished reading it. Nobody is safe in terms of who they are skewing, and, you know, it's a little bit raw. And ultimately, like, poor Todd. I mean, you know me. Somebody needs to give that kid a hug. Like, he never wins, ever. He's like a very bastardized Charlie Brown figure in that regard. Everyone is out to get him, but he doesn't have any allies. So that's kind of a bummer for him.
No, but he's almost, if everyone else is human, he's not human because he's so unaware of everything.
Sure.
Too. And it kind of makes me wonder, it's like, do we see, is that always going to be his role in the book as just the sounding board for people? Or will he emotionally grow as the book goes on? And I don't know if it's really that kind of book. I think it's more just to be able to satirize
the ridiculousness of the world. He's less present in this arc than he was in the first one. And I think that's interesting.
In a lot of ways, he's almost not present because now he's being forced to be someone who he's not. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So he's already, except he has this moment when his dad is telling him he has to put on a dress and he's like, but I like myself. And that was adorable. I think that if there is more Todd, then I find the rest of it easier to take because it can be a little heavy-handed at times. And I think that he provides the balance because he's not part of that world. He is sweet and innocent, sure, but also skewed to be almost like perfectly so. His naivety is like so practiced as to be, it's a commentary in and of itself.
Right. Yeah.
So I think more of him makes the rest of it easier to take because you see the imbalance.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I'm still liking the second arc too. It, you know, continues with that the same sort of style that the first one does. And it's, I like what he's commenting on.
I noticed that it's now an ongoing.
Yeah. Well, it was originally a mini series, but I think it sold well enough and they sold TV rights.
Yeah. Too, yeah.
To where they could then make it an ongoing comic series.
I cannot picture this in another medium, I'll be totally honest.
It will, yeah, it'll be interesting. It definitely lends itself stylistically, though, to a very good adult cartoon.
Oh, wow. Okay, so, wow, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, this isn't going to be only... for kids. This is
No,
this...
no, no, I, Jesus Christ, I knew that. But I was picturing live action.
Oh,
stylized
no.
Stylized cartoon, absolutely. But I, no, wow. Maybe I'll edit that part out because I sound like an idiot. That makes a lot of sense. I can see that being, it fits right in with, you know, Adult Swim type commentary and humor. So, yeah. Is that who picked it up?
I don't know who picked it up. I'm sure we could look it up, but it's gotta be, Fox or one of those, companies. It's gotta be a cartoon and it's gotta be aimed for adults.
So, yeah, certainly. So there's nothing in it for kids except nothing.
Nothing. No.
Nothing. But he is a sweetheart.
You got to have somebody to like. No one else. No, you can't like anyone else in the book.
No. No, not at all. All
right. Well, speaking of books for kids, you ready to move on?
I don't think our next book is for kids.
No, it's not.
Did you know that when I was a kid, I used to watch Battle of the Planets? Every morning before kindergarten, and I would always insist on watching it with an Afghan tied around my neck like a cape.
Next up, Iron Man number 16, written by Kieran Gillen, penciled by Carlo Paglion, I'm going to say, and inked by Scott Hanna. Colors are by Guru X. Iron Man is published by Marvel Comics.
So this is part 4 of The Secret Origin of Tony Stark. Trapped inside the monstrous alien mech called the God Killer, Tony Stark finally faced off against his captor, the Rigellian Recorder 451. Decades ago, 451 made a deal with Tony's parents to genetically alter him to be a pilot for the God Killer. In control of the immense weapon, Tony could be an unchallenged protector for mankind. Or that's how the plan was supposed to go. When Tony tried to sync with the controls, it would not respond. Something had gone terribly wrong. Realizing his mission was a failure, a regretful 451 decided to delete his databases and move the dangerous God Killer to a far dimension where it could never be abused. Unfortunately, Tony was going with it.
Yep. So this is our 16th issue, and you just powered through all of them, right?
I did. They've been sitting in my Comixology queue, and I read the first couple way at the beginning. And I think, like a lot of people, it wasn't anything that really stuck with me, and I made the choice to set it aside. I guess I wasn't necessarily, trade waiting, but Iron Man is a character that's always going to be there, and I didn't feel too bad not making him a priority since he's in every single other book. So and I'm going to ask you why you wanted to talk about this one specifically, but when you said, let's do it, let's talk about Iron Man, I did go back and read from the very beginning, straight through.
So like why I wanted to talk about it, I mean, we talk about a bunch of different things, but I think Iron Man has been overlooked, like this run has been overlooked because it kind of fell by the wayside for a lot of people, but I don't think it is a series that people should be ignoring. Because I think it's a really well done story and it's been really compelling. And what Gillen is doing since issue one is kind of been building this big story up with a lot of, pieces that fit together in spite of, events and tie-ins and everything else to something that's really great, a really special Iron Man run.
Yeah, I have to give him some credit. He's definitely taking this character that, you know, anybody can claim to be an expert on Tony Stark at this point. He's so oversaturated just from the movies and then every single other book that he's in, and has had some very prominent roles in the most recent events. And yet there's still some new stuff happening, and it's stuff about him and kind of his identity and how he fits in with the rest of the characters that we all know. And that says a lot. It's not always successful when a writer does that.
I also have two feelings about this, because I'm sort of, Iron Man is probably, he's at least in my like top three Marvel characters, because I've always liked that he was the self-made man. He was the self-made hero.
That's so funny, because he's not really. I mean, well,
not anymore.
But no, I mean, even before this, he has so many resources. I would have said the same thing about Hawkeye. Absolutely a self-made hero, because he has nothing. But Tony Stark has had so much at his disposal, and the catalyst for becoming a hero is something that he had to overcome. But the starting point was...
Well, sure, he had resources. He's the billionaire hero. He, you know, Stark Industries provides him the wealth he needed in order to build the Iron Man suit.
Right, so...
But he still it's still his intelligence that made him the hero. You know, it's not like Stark Industries, then he went to the nerd group and said, hey guys, build me a suit because I want to fly around and fight, you know, supervillains.
Okay. He's very resourceful. He's very much a self-starter, and there's no denying that he's a genius. But I don't know if self-made is a word that I would apply.
Well, that's just because you're a liberal, you know, bleeding heart.
Ah, okay.
And well, to go back to Iron Man history, though, so Stark Industries...
You just dropped that right there, and then let's talk about comics some more.
No, but it does go into it, because this has been addressed in Iron Man continuity that... And even in the movies do it, too, that Stark Industries was a weapons manufacturer.
Absolutely.
And he pivoted the industry, but, like... None of this has really been, it's not erased like DC history. Like, Tony is an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. He lost everything. Mm-hmm. Stark Industries was not his anymore. He Correct. Built himself back up from nothing.
Right.
So he is self-made.
That's true. I was forgetting about the whole Stark Resilient storyline and the recovery after.
Oh, no, even, this is going back even further. Like, no, that's modern.
I know, but that's like the sort of modern, because a lot of the older stuff is... It's just kind of floating out there in the ether. But you're absolutely right. In the more kind of modern era of Iron Man, with Iron Man disassembled and then the which I love that arc, by the way.
Oh, yeah, no, it's the one disassembled of my favorites. Stuff is great. But I'm going back to like Demon in the Bottle.
Right, right. I haven't read that in a long time.
No, yeah, it's what?
It's
early
good.
Early 80s, but that's a pivotal.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pivotal moment for the character. He is stripped to down to nothing, and he has to make that decision of, do I live my life a homeless alcoholic, mm-hmm. or do I give up my addiction and be the man that I should be?
So what does me being a bleeding heart liberal have to do with my, like, defensiveness of the term self-made?
I'm just kidding, because it seems to be, like, a common Republican trope, too, of people, you know, who come from privilege, continuing that privilege and still being called self-made.
Got it. Okay.
You know, self-made is, there's no such thing. And that I was more thinking of the, I don't even know, probably like previous election, and now we're getting political, but like of like Mitt Romney being a self-made man.
Got it.
You know, it's like, everyone has access to social services. There's no such thing as self-made. Nobody lives their life in a bubble. Mm-hmm.
So, and if you're talking about overcoming personal demons and restarting, then sure, I'll give you that.
And that's going to be a common thing for most superhero hero books, but I've always found Iron Man really fascinating because of him he's not a Norse god who will be reborn when he dies, or,
just a guy in a suit.
Yeah, he's a guy who's super or smart and builds a suit. Mm-hmm. And then the suit goes into, I mean, part of why I like Iron Man so much, too, is the suit allows him to be a superhero, but it also protects him from the world. you know, and shelters him from having to deal with a lot too.
Right.
You know, it's that emotional kind of encasement, which goes into the whole addiction and all kinds of stuff. You know, there's been storylines where it's like he won't come out of the suit because the suit is safe. Once you get out of the suit, you're exposed.
Right.
So I like a lot of the things that can be explored with him. And his hubris, too, you know, that goes along with his intellect is a lot of, it's a lot of that is a suit for an emotional protection.
Mm-hmm.
But the retconning of his past does change, you know, that self-madeness a bit. If he was genetically programmed to be the man he is today.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that?
I think that it didn't work. Is sort of a little bit of an out of our predetermined destinies.
Mm-hmm.
That in spite of 451's, best plans, lay plans and his super intellect, things didn't go the way he had planned and something wasn't right. And maybe it's more than just genetics on who we become.
So I also think that's a reasonable way to dismiss the importance of what Tony learned. Obviously, there's some more coming. I mean, the end of this particular issue, he's all hopped up about something more going back to his parents and something more, no doubt, involving his origin. But I think that the feelings that he had about being so disconnected from everyone else, and I think that through the story and through overcoming the situation that 451 put him in, he has regained a little bit more of his sense of self. So he's not feeling as isolated. He's not feeling as much, you know, not in control of his own destiny.
Right. Yeah, it was this escape or this, you know, this this encounter he had to have on the other side of the galaxy has made him tied back to Earth again.
Mm-hmm.
Which he was leaving to try to find himself.
Mm-hmm. Which is I sound like a terrible fan, but I have the same reaction to this story as I did to the Thor solo title.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all happening simultaneously with what's going on with these like giant events and kind of big picture stories that like Hickman is telling in the main titles. And
yeah,
I'm not trying to make it into more than it is. I'm really not. I'm not nitpicking. It's just that I have to get into a different frame of mind when I sit down to read a solo title with a character like Iron Man or a character like Thor, so that I am invested in the stakes, so that I actually care that Tony Stark is off finding himself because he feels like he doesn't belong. Because every other book that I read, that's not being addressed.
Yeah, and that's a problem with superhero books and the universes anyway. They pack so many different stories in.
And I'm fine with that. I really am. I'm just addressing the fact that actually it's a nice break from the intensity of the big picture story. And you know damn well that my biggest complaint about Avengers, like the newest run, has been that it isn't character oriented, and I totally get off on that. So this is excellent as a companion piece. I wonder if there will be kind of larger implications further down the road as this particular arc gets resolved. And that's what I think is exciting.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, to go back to team books and events versus the solo books, like I like that separation. I don't really need the team books to be explorations of the characters.
Yeah, I know you don't.
No, there should be team books. There should be battles and bigger stories that don't involve what's going on individually with the people. And then their solo books are those separations. Those are like, what is the character about? And I like that. I like that kind of compartmentalized.
Yeah. I think it has to do with some of my favorite stories, though, managed to do both. Some of my favorite stories, like Avengers stories, not like team book stories, managed to do both.
I think that's why people liked Bendis's run for so long, that he did a good job of that. But I never really liked, none of that really grabbed me that much. It wasn't an Avengers run that I cared for, but I know a ton of people do.
Right.
I think it also goes to that kind of OCD of like, I want my team books to be about the teams and my solo books to be about the character.
Right. Or I just want everybody to get along.
Well, then you wouldn't have conflict, and then you wouldn't have story, and then we wouldn't have anything to talk about.
Right, right. And, you know, I don't actually feel that way.
Right.
The only other thing I want to mention about Iron Man is that I'm kind of bummed out that his little, like, robot sidekick guy is gone, because I thought he was delightful. It was a, like, it brought a lot of humor to the story, and I think that Iron Man as a character uses humor so much to deflect, like, how he's really feeling, and I think a lot of people can relate to that, and so when he has another character to play off with, mm-hmm. that it works really well with telling the story in a lighter way, even though there are, like, these big things that they're trying to overcome.
Yeah.
So
I will also say, too, this series has Death's Head in it, and that's a lot of fun.
Wait, isn't that what I just said?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
But you didn't say who it was.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. I mentioned it to you earlier. You're right. Hey, guys, earlier, Aaron and I were talking about Death's Head. Come with us on this journey.
I think it's actually technically Death's Head 2, which I'm more of a fan of Death's Head 2 than I was of Death's Head 1. That's for all you Marvel. That's for all you Marvel UK,
like,
nerds out there.
Super esoteric.
Nah, that's Marvel UK. Come on, everyone's read the Marvel UK stuff.
No.
Well, then you're not really a comic book fan.
Yeah, it's becoming more and more clear every time I talk to you.
Yep. So, speaking of being a fake comic book fan, you want to talk about an independent book?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Hello, this is Raymond Thomas Jakes. I am 31 years old, and I love Batman. I've always loved Batman. And I've noticed an interesting trend as I get older, that I become more of a traditionalist with Batman and his surrounding characters. When I was in the 1990s, me and a lot of other people were really psyched to see Tim Drake with his long pants and his black cape. And as I get older, I find myself becoming more and more of a traditionalist, and it's like, I don't even need the pants. Just put them in the green boots, you know what I'm saying? Just put them in the boots. Cold legs are part of the job, kid. I'm Raymond Jakes, and this has been my Nerd Confession.
Lastly, the sixth and final issue of Mara is what we'll be talking about. It's published by Image Comics, and this book is written by Brian Wood, art by Ming Doyle, and colors by Jordi Belair.
Okay, so this is the last issue of a story about a girl who gains superpowers live on television, and the ramifications of that exposure and her journey as she kind of deals with who she is, who she was, and who she is becoming. I'm not going to give you a whole lot more information. There's much to know about the world that she lives in that certainly sets the tone for the character as well, but this is such a sweet and fulfilling little miniseries that I really think everyone should pick it up, and it gives you a lot to think about.
Now, I wish I remember what this was pitched for as, but I know Brian Wood had written a story or something very similar to it and pitched it, I think, to Marvel. I don't know exactly what the details were, and maybe he never said, but it was supposed to be sort of an ongoing or miniseries for Marvel. Not necessarily with this character, but something similar to it.
With the idea of somebody, of like the first superhero kind of happening live on television?
Right,
like
yeah.
That.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And it got rejected for some reason or another, so he eventually just decided to do it as its own little miniseries. And, you know, and it kind of adapted it and made it work that way. But this is a really surprising series. I think a lot of people didn't read it past issue one because they thought it was going to be a sports book.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that, too. Like, I read issue one, and I'm like, oh, this is not what I was expecting or wanting.
There's so much emphasis on the role that competitive sports play in the, like, world society and the prominence of, like, Mara as a, like, as an athlete and a role model in that way.
Yeah.
But it's not.
No, really what it's about is somebody who, I think it's a good story just about what happens when you no longer identify with your race, like the human race,
mm-hmm.
you know, like her awakening, quote unquote, and then these superpowers that emerge separate her from humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, you know, as a spoiler, like we already talked about that, but, you know, the way it ends is then that reconnection.
Almost. I mean, it's not a spark
of it.
It is. It's the spark of it. She's not as alienated. She's not as angry.
Yeah.
I mean, she was so furious and had every right to be. But
well,
I think
she was on the brink of world annihilating the world.
Right. Right. But I think that her disconnect, that transformation of separation is, I would have honestly liked to see a lot more of that.
If it wasn't six issues.
Sure. But there could have been a lot more that we saw that alienated her. I accept what we did see as being like really fucking bad. But I think that her growth as a godlike being and the loss of her connection to humanity is really intriguing. Because that's why there's such an impact when she then shares that moment of humanity with the astronaut later. And why it like literally brings tears to her eyes. Like she's remembering who she was. And it's kind of beautiful. I think it's great. I think it is not at all what I was expecting, though. I completely agree.
And that point with the astronaut, too, it's like beyond. So issue one happens, and then issue two, three, four, and five are the stripping away of humanity by humanity itself.
Mm-hmm.
She was already isolated as this world celebrity. You know, the sports and everything had isolated her already enough from the human race.
Mm-hmm.
And then her emergence of powers and the way the world works, you know, with the way society is structured, was just a further stripping away of humanity from her. So she no longer had anything to identify with until the end, where somebody was willing to give up his life for the furtherment of the human race.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. I had discounted probably more than I should have the role that she was in at the beginning of the story. I mean, she was already so much like an outsider from all of the people who fawned over her and looked up to her. And like, she had very few actual human connections left. And that's, you know, it's kind of a sad story on both ends, like where she was and where she ends up. There's such loss captured there, but in very different ways. And she deals with that loss in different ways before and after her transformation.
So it's a growth, like it's almost like her superpowers emerged, but then her humanity had to grow, if that makes sense.
Huh. Because I was actually thinking the opposite. Like her superpowers emerge and her humanity was like diminished in the process.
Right. That's what I think. Her humanity was diminished in the process, and then she had to learn again. And we
Got
see
it.
That spark
okay.
of learning at
sure,
the end
sure. yeah.
of what is special about humanity.
Mm-hmm. The fact that she looks back and she says, like, I've got nothing here. I've got nothing pulling me back, but maybe I will again. Like, I'm not ready to come back yet. And that yet is very important. I also have to say, I think it's kind of excellent that that we're done. That her story isn't finished, but I feel very fulfilled.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I didn't feel like, oh, what happens next? I think it's nice to kind of know, like, it's a non-ending, but it's an ending enough mm-hmm. for what the story is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, quite lovely. Yeah.
And art and drawing and everything else, how that all played into it, like, was very, it's very subtle,
mm-hmm.
A lot of it. Yeah, I don't know if there's anything more to, you know, to really dive into besides that, other than I wish more people would read this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And hopefully they will once it comes out collected.
Right.
Okay, are you ready to move on?
Hi, guys. My name is Liz, and I have known Andrea for a really long time. We have a little university connection, and I follow her on Twitter. Now, while I consider myself kind of a general all-around nerd, I'd never really ventured into the world of comic books. I've been reading Andrea's tweets, and they are so often about comic books that I finally wanted to know what the big deal was, and I gave in and asked for recommendations, and it pretty much set off a chain reaction. I read all of the issues of Saga, read a full storyline from Fables, a couple of Amelia Coles, any free previews that I could find on Comixology. So I guess that my nerd confession is that I am a newly formed comic book nerd.
Welcome to Grief Counseling. I think this might be all she wrote, ladies and gentlemen. At least as far as this particular comic goes. Each week for the past 8 weeks, Andrea has read a volume of The Walking Dead. We recorded the following segment immediately after she finished volume 8, 43 through 48. That's issues. Let's see how she did. Andrea?
Yeah.
So, what happened?
Well, at the end of 42, the governor comes back,
right,
which I was surprised about last time.
Mm-hmm.
I will concede that the first couple issues of this volume were not as bad as I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the immediate bloodbath that I feared. I actually have to give a little bit of props with the detail, like they didn't know how to drive the tank. And so once they mastered that, they certainly didn't know how to load or fire it. So it was mostly for show, as opposed to my initial reaction at the end of 42 with, the fucking cavalry coming. I kind of expected it to just be over. And, let's see. Last week, if you guys were paying attention, Aaron referenced my betrayal earlier in the show, and it's because I had read the one sentence summary and seen the cover of volume 9. And the summary goes something like, blah blah blah, after the loss of everything, blah, Rick and Carl, blah blah blah. So, I mean, I'm not an idiot. I knew that it was going to be bad. And I knew that Rick and Carl were at least going to make it through the end of this particular volume. So you can be upset with me for spoiling myself, but
I don't think it necessarily makes it any easier, though.
No. Oh, my God. Easy is the worst word. No, it didn't make it easier at all. But it was something at least to keep me going.
Mm.
So anyway, they attack and it's not successful, kind of brilliantly unsuccessful. And I realized when I was reading it that a lot of the characters that had really not resonated or had rubbed me the wrong way, or whose motivations I questioned, or even whose defining characteristics I questioned, like Andrea, for example. And keeping in mind that I've never seen the show, because I've certainly heard a lot of people complain about her character on the show, but I always found it difficult to accept that she was this sharpshooter who kind of immediately also mastered the tactical mind. I can accept the natural talent of her being a good shot, but like so many of them, that was pushed to the extreme. And she was plunged into this role of then training everybody else. And I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, it's an interesting examination of the way that people may behave, what they can pull from within in those dire circumstances. But on the other hand, I just often found myself seeing those kind of stretch relationships as a barrier to me caring about the character.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, in this case though, most of those kind of moments that the characters became known for are what were highlighted in the battle. And the strengths or the things that had been kind of less, how do I say this? I can't wait to edit this. It's going to be awesome. The things that I saw as one-dimensional became the touchstone for seeing what was really behind that individual personality. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a defining characteristic in this survival world.
Right. And so I saw that as, I don't know, like cold-hearted and like poor writing, because there was nothing more that I knew about her or Mishan or, you know, even some of the characters that are no longer around. Well, mm-hmm. like no one's around now, but in this case, it worked anyway. So for the first several issues of this volume, it was interesting to see, I can't believe I'm saying that, but it actually was interesting to see kind of the ramifications of Mishan's actions in the town in regards to the governor and her attack on him last time.
Mm-hmm.
And the power of manipulation that he holds over his minions and the lies that he was spreading about Rick and the band of people in the prison. He has this moment where he's kind of rallying the town about these monsters, and it's not the zombies, right? It's the people. And look at the way that these people have succumbed to their inner demons. And I mean, he was talking about himself, but he was blaming it on Rick. And it was just so disgusting, except it was so, I didn't see it coming, right? It hadn't hit me how much of a con he was pulling on the kind of common people in his town.
Yeah.
But I thought that scene was really, it was really important, especially with what happens at the very end. Okay, so the first moment that I lost my shit was when Tyrese was killed.
Yeah, it was pretty intense.
Yeah, yeah. It's
Did you find yourself with his character? Did you, like, I found myself caring a lot about him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though he has a lot of flaws, I mm-hmm. still found him to be a very gravitational character.
Yeah, absolutely. He's he was one of the few that I thought had like a relatable demonstration of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
He was strong, but he was also afraid. He had needs, but he also had control over them. And I mean, if you remember how upset I was with his behavior with Carol a couple of volumes ago, it was mostly because I liked him, and I thought it sucked that he made that choice and kind of ruined something that could have been a good thing. You know, in hindsight, Carol's a fucking psychopath, but I think that the reason why I was frustrated with his behavior earlier on is because I did think he was a reasonable personality in a sea of extremes.
Yeah, he was definitely the more of a voice of reason compared mm-hmm. to Rick.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say he had more of a grip on reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he also didn't have the gripping fear that Rick does in terms of family and survival and keeping the units together and that sort of thing.
Well, he'd already come to terms with that.
Yeah.
He does say at the point right before he and Mishan head out, like suicide mission style, that he doesn't want to die, which not a lot of people in this story actually say that.
Yeah.
So that scene was very difficult because it was so raw. And in a book that has so much death, a very difficult death somehow still resonates. I don't know if you remember the panels involved, but...
In Tyrese's death?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, those are like, there's a few things that, like, I don't remember what issues they're in because it was a while ago since I read them, but I remember several. There are some things that just you can't shake.
It's really very common in, not just comics, but in movies, that the violent act of decapitating a human being is presented as like no big deal. You just separate the head from the body.
Right.
And it, like, from a biological standpoint, there's a tremendous amount of force needed for that to occur. The splitting of the, like, bone and the muscle and the tendons and the, and it's not a graceful, peaceful release. It really bothered me because it takes so long, mm-hmm. and it's in front of everybody and it's awful. So, so that happened. And I guess in the midst of all of that, it was kind of like, I was pleased to see the governor's men challenge him kind of throughout the entire volume. And I was pleased to see him be unsure of himself and have to retreat and not have all of the answers and not be in control because that was his, like, foundation for his character when previously introduced. And this felt very vindicating. I mean, up until the very end, it was, fuck you, Governor. Nobody agrees with you anymore. You are making poor choices and everyone's going to die.
Yeah.
And that was, yeah, okay. Like, I got a little bit of joy out of that, not gonna lie. So I think that almost everyone is dead, right? I'm not gonna go back and look. So if you remember, you can tell me. But
Who's alive and who's dead?
Yeah, I mean, I think almost everybody, like I know that Andrea got shot, and I know that Herschel got shot, and I've lost track of Michonne. She pops up, and she gets all gangbusters with the governor, and it's fucking genius, and then I think she escaped. So I'm done, by the way. I'm not reading anymore. Hmm. So in my world, like, they meet up, and, oh, I don't know, live happily ever after, and it's fine. But I don't remember what happened to Glenn.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about Alice. And I don't know about Maggie. And I guess I care a little bit.
I'm going to hold off on telling you what happens afterwards.
Okay.
And I'm going to leave it to you if you want to know. It's not hard to find out from recaps.
Okay.
But,
I mean, we haven't talked about, like, obviously the worst part of this volume.
Right. And I'll say, for me, when I got to the end of this volume, at this, you know, last issue, I was in the same way. Like, I cried and I put it down and I didn't go back to it for a week. Like I said, like, I can't read anymore. I'm done. No more.
You started reading around 80, you said?
That's about what issue was out. Yes.
Okay. So you had, like, all of the volumes in front of you and you were just,
I was just, like, going through it.
Okay.
Maybe it wasn't quite 80. It was more maybe like 65 or something.
But
like,
obviously you had.
Yeah, this is already had already been out.
Okay.
Yeah, so we were past this. So yeah, I put this down and I just started reading Fables instead.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Yeah, Fables gets pretty intense too, but in much different ways.
Right.
And this, you know, when I started reading at this point, like, Luke was like a month old or something.
Yeah, too. That was going to be my next question, as if you had babies.
Yeah, it was that's when I started reading comics really again, is when Luke was born and I just bought an iPad. Hmm. So I could read comics on the iPad. And I really just started, just looked up, like, best comics, you know, 2000, whatever, 10, because I hadn't read comics in so long. And people were saying, oh, the iPad's great for reading comics. And I said, oh, well, let me see what Superman's up to. I'm not really interested. But then I started finding all these other comics. So it was more like, okay, I'll just start reading this on the iPad, because it was dark and you could read when you're trying to put a baby to sleep.
Right.
But I got to that point. It's like, I think I woke everyone up when I was in my, because I just couldn't contain it.
Right.
And it's, yeah, I think as especially as a parent, this is the hardest volume to read.
The visual is really bad. Mm-hmm. I don't read a lot of prose with this kind of content in it either, surprisingly.
Yeah.
But the visual was,
Now what happens at the very, is that the last issue of the volume?
Yeah. I mean, well, it has to be, right? I mean,
no, I just don't know where they cut off and.
Well, there's not a ton of resolution. The Rick and his family are running for the truck or running to get out. And one of the governor's men, actually a woman, shoots Lori and the baby.
Right.
We see the response on the ground. We lose Rick and Carl for a moment. Rick tells Carl not to look back. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the part that bothered me the most. And then the woman who shot Lori flips the fuck out at the governor. Finally, one of the people who is like ostensibly working for this monster actually calls him on it. Because he's been lying to so many of them. And then he gets shot and fed to the zombies.
Okay, I didn't know if that's what I was wondering. I didn't know if that was in the volume or not, or if that came afterwards. I forgot.
Yeah, I mean, the prison is essentially overrun by the loose hordes of zombies who, like, always gather around the fence. And,
yeah.
And because they drove through the fence, like, the prison as a refuge is essentially done. There are a handful of survivors, and I think that that's one of the things that I'll admit, from a storytelling perspective, I'm a little bit interested. I think that there were survivors on both sides, not a ton, but the people that I lost track of, and you know, whomever of the governor's men, it's a little touch and go, just because there are so many zombies who are like entering, and I was probably not paying as close attention at that point because of what had just happened. But like, we sort of then step away from the prison with the gates crushed and the zombies re-entering. And it's kind of this like iconic image to reflect back to the first time that we saw the prison, like over the hilltop.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick and Carl are running towards the forest with their bag of supplies, and Carl asks about his mom and the baby, and Rick tells him that they didn't make it.
Yeah.
How old is Carl? Like 10?
Yeah, I think probably around there. I don't know. I don't know exactly. I know, I'm sure it's in the wiki, but he's like, I think 8 when it starts or something like that.
Oh, so then maybe he's not quite that. Yeah. No, I'm done.
Too young.
Everybody's too young for this. Like, really, what age is appropriate?
Yeah, and realistically, like, no, I don't know. None. But it doesn't, things don't get better.
Yeah, I know.
This is probably the most.
A lot of people that it doesn't get worse for a while. That there's,
Yeah, there is. This is the low point, and you drag yourself out. And there are, as bad as it seems now, things, you know, get better somewhat. But you know, it's an ongoing story.
Mm-hmm.
And then things get worse again.
Right.
And right now where the story's at, there is a major thing going on.
Yeah, I've garnered that from the internet.
But it's interesting too, because like where it is right now, like if you were to catch up, it's a much different situation in the current storyline than this one. Even though there are similarities, because it's all the same world, so you deal with similar kind of things, but
mm-hmm.
This is different. And it's
do you like it better now?
I still find it really hard to read. Some like issue 100 is another big like kind of turning point, and that was another one where after I read it, I'm like, I don't think I can keep reading this because I can't have stuff like this happen anymore. It's just too hard. But I still read.
What makes you go back?
Because I have to know what happens.
So the story is compelling.
Yeah, it's a well-done story. It's not an easy story to read. It's a hard story to read, but I care about the characters, and I care about this world that they're living in, and I want there to be some happiness when it's done. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's what's going to happen, but I still want that. And I think the characters want that. There's still hope in the world, even as desperate as it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's an evolution, too. Like, society has collapsed for so long, and after the collapse, you have a rebuild. And right. Ultimately, you know, if it goes on far enough, maybe that's where it'll end up, hopefully.
To the rebuilding.
To the rebuild, yeah. And to, like, kind of reclaim humanity. Because it is The Walking Dead, but in the end, it'd be nice if it was the land of the living.
That was very poetic.
Yeah, I'm pretty deep.
I mean, you've had 8 weeks to prepare for right. My response to this.
I haven't really been thinking about it much other than what people have been talking to you about and kind of getting you prepared for. I mean, I knew what was coming, but that's why I wanted to talk about this first, right, when you were done reading it. Mm-hmm. Because of the emotional gravity of this. And yeah. That's why I've been asking you too over these weeks, like, you know, when you start out saying you don't really care about these characters, but you do, because when they die, you care.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, there's something to be said for a story that causes a strong emotional response in either direction. It's not clear to me that I could necessarily wish my response on anybody else, but I also think that my emotional reaction to this sort of stuff is, you know, a little bit extra fucked. So I acknowledge that I take a lot of this to heart more than many people.
I don't think so, though. I mean, I think this speaks to why it's such a popular book. There's a reason this is the, you know, best-selling independent title of all time, I guess, you know, at this point. Because of the emotional weight and how much people have identified or become tied to these characters.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think it's anything different than what you're feeling than what a lot of people feel. I mean, if you don't have kids, maybe, you know, then it's maybe easier to separate yourself from, like, the family situations. You know, you can empathize with that, but you don't necessarily identify with it.
Right.
But regardless, empathy or identification, they're equally powerful. And people gravitate to this because of what it is. It's a struggle for life and death in a human way. It's no longer about the zombies. And the zombies were a good hook initially in the book. It was that whole first, like, 40 issues or, you know, 35 issues.
Right.
And it still plays into the book. It's now a natural part of the world.
Right.
But the world it's a bigger world out there.
It's not a world that I'm interested in revisiting anytime soon.
No, and I think what we were even talking about, so going forward, we're probably not going to do grief counseling, at least for a little while.
Yeah, there's not a probably in that statement.
Well, or maybe not with it. Maybe not with this book, or, you know, fair. Maybe not with you, or something like that.
Yeah, to make it super, super clear. I'm done. I'm done with The Walking Dead. I guess I can't necessarily promise forever, but for a long time.
Yeah. So we don't have to decide anything right now. I understand what you're saying.
But I did a good job. You have to acknowledge that I lasted longer than most of you thought I would. And yeah, I was game for this, even though I brought it on myself.
Yeah, absolutely. But so what we were talking about, maybe this is a little premature. We'll see if it gels, is doing more, doing some creator interviews going forward as a last segment.
Like inside the actor studio, only the comics version.
Yeah.
That makes me smile. This book does not make me smile. I need something to make me smile.
Our first guest is going to be Robert Kirkman, and he's going to just step by step. He's going to hypnotize you first, and then he's going to make you think you're Laurie.
That's the worst thing you've ever said to me.
Well, it's fitting for this segment.
It is. I guess a little bit. I'm glad that I read it, because at least I have that notch on my belt and can have an intelligent conversation about why it's not for me, as opposed to, you know, 8 weeks ago when I was adamant about the zombies.
I will say as a teaser for you, just as an enticement, what happens after this is probably the best kind of emotional study of the characters, like of what Rick goes through post Lori's death.
Sure. I can see that.
Is very interesting and very well done.
Okay. Well, give me some time, dude.
I'm not saying you have to.
A lot.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm not going to share it with the internet about how I feel.
you can save it till at least after we post the show.
Awesome.
All right. Well, I think that's enough for this week then, right?
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's it for Comics Therapy, everyone. One more huge thank you to Edward for the new equipment. Seriously, we can't thank you enough for this.
And thanks to all of you out there listening to the show and talking to us on Twitter. Show notes, details about subscribing, and information about submitting a nerd confession are all on the website at comicstherapy.com. Have an awesome week.
See you later, guys.
Day after day, alone on a hill, the man with the foolish grin is keeping perfectly still. But nobody wants to know him. They can see that he's just a fool, and he never gives an answer. But the fool on the hill sees the sun going down, and the eyes in his head see the world.